Hey everyone, welcome. It's the WrestleMania. Shut up, WrestleMania 27 review show for Stump Grinder,
the ball suck edition.
This is Jeremy. I know my voice sounds different, but Eric's here, Kevin's here.
Woo-hoo.
So we're gonna talk about our experience at WrestleMania. Probably not so much the card because, well, you can read the results. So, all right. So yeah, so. We went yesterday. Take it over.
All right. We got there. Let's see. The show started, 7 p.m. Eastern time? Uh-huh. So we got there about... Well, we went to the CNN Center area, CNN Studios, to try to grab some food. And good Lord, what a fucking motley crew of people there were in that little lobby area. There were like 12 fast food restaurants and about 70,000 people looking for greasy food.
Yeah, there's the dude dressed up as... We thought it was supposed to be Mankind, but he looked more like Jesus Christ, so it was completely confusing. On an architectural note, this will continue to persist, but CNN Center is completely shittily laid out. The floor plan is horrendous. They decided to put two fast food restaurants right in an aisle where there's an exit to the outside. Look, fuckers. Don't do that. It's terrible planning.
Yes. Other things not to do, don't show up dressed up like Sergeant Slaughter when you're smaller than me.
And don't dress up like Hulk Hogan when you're built like Scott Norton.
They're just, there was a bunch of creeps. And as we were walking up to the Georgia Dome, there was one guy with, like, I don't know, not enough teeth for, I don't know. Half a tooth, maybe. Trying to start the, oh, you didn't know? And then, like, he would look around, hoping to God that somebody would respond, and nobody would respond.
Yeah, even the guys that were around him, like, that
his friends.
Well, that's what I was trying to figure out, because there were like, eight guys. He started the road dog thing, and suddenly that eight turned into three, and then it turned into one, because his two friends just went way ahead of him. So.
Create distance.
Yeah. And that was one thing that maybe we didn't notice as much in Detroit and Orlando, but we all thought that there were more people dressed up as wrestlers this time around. Uh-huh.
They were dressed up. I wouldn't say most were supposed to be wrestlers, but...
Right. Like, I mean, Kane that just had a piece of red fabric over his mouth. And the goddamn Undertaker who looks like that every day with eyeliner and a black trench coat.
Uh-huh. And then, should we just get him out of the way now?
The yeah baby kid.
The yeah baby kid.
Some fucking twerp with a baby mullet and a red cape that said "Hey baby kid" on the back of it, or "Yeah baby kid."
Hey baby kid. We called him my brother, the yeah baby kid.
We have called him every name under the book: the oh yeah kid and the baby maker kid.
So what the fuck is that guy wearing, kid?
Yeah. And he was cool enough to be wearing sunglasses inside of the Georgia Dome.
And, of course, the baby mullet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There were a few macho men also.
Someone was dressed like a clown. Just a clown, not even doink. So, all right. We're trying to figure out when WrestleMania turned into Comic-Con. Because it was just a weird... And, of course, there were title belts everywhere. The guy behind us had a United States Championship with his name on it.
Yeah.
So there was a father who was wearing the Best Beer Drinker in the World t-shirt with his two sons with him, which we thought was wholly appropriate for a wrestling event.
And actually,
a title belt?
It was a title belt with a beer on it in the middle. It said National Beer Drinking Champion.
And the thing is that it wasn't even like a shitty-looking homemade belt. Mm-hmm. It was like a professionally engraved, like he went to wildcatbelt.com or something and got serious that exists. And he got this belt made. So I guess good for you to you spend your money on that much money on beer and then budget a little bit for a championship belt and maybe a cab ride home, you dipshit. And
budget for your child support payment.
Yeah. All right, Ricky Morton. So, we get to the Dome, and, I mean, it's full for the most part. I think the MARTA system might have kept maybe a handful of seats from being full right away. But, otherwise, we sit down, and they go through their whole, no laser pointers, this is a copyrighted event.
Because it's 1997.
Right. And then, Justin Roberts announces, the following match is a lumberjack match for the United States Championship. And we're like, what? And we sort of look at each other, and we're like, this can't be right. And we're like, maybe you meant Intercontinental? No, Wade Barrett's in the eight-man tag. there's no fucking way this is a pre-match. This is before WrestleMania starts. So then, there's enough of a pause for us all to think about this. And then you hear, ding, ding, ding. Once again, the following contest is a lumberjack match. And for the United States title. And we're like, what the fuck did they just do?
Yeah, because I think we all turned to each other the first time we heard it. And we're like, he screwed up, didn't he? He meant intercontinental title, right?
Or he meant Lumberjill match, or interpromotional battle royal, anything but Sheamus versus Daniel Bryan being kicked off the main card.
Well, and Sheamus too. I mean, it was funny because they introduced all the Lumberjacks, and it was exactly who you thought it would be, except for the Nexus group wasn't there. That was really about it.
Everyone else was got there.
And it was fun to hear the crowd pops. Like Kali, of course. Don't get it. Got a big pop.
Zack Ryder
got a big one. Evan Bourne,
maybe Mark Henry, but otherwise, like, you could hear a cricket fart for the Usos.
Yeah, which it made no sense to bring them out last.
Right, David Hart Smith in his cowboy hat.
Yeah, we were trying to figure out who was wearing the cream cowboy hat the previous night at the Hall of Fame, and I was starting to wonder if that was David Hart Smith.
Yeah.
My apologies to JBL for thinking that D.H. Smith was actually JBL.
Yeah. Oh, and how the Lumberjack thing came about, or how the Battle Royal came about afterwards, is Brian and Sheamus, was it?
They just rumbled into the Lumberjacks until the referee called for
the bell. Well, no, Sheamus, Daniel Bryan was actually a smart baby face who didn't attack the heel Lumberjacks and, like, slid back into the ring once. And then, Sheamus slid into, I think it was the heel Lumberjacks again, and he just decided to start beating on people. So it just turned into one giant brawl. Daniel Bryan came down with one of his high knees and took out Ted DiBiase, and that just started everything.
Oh, and the guy we couldn't remember his name was Johnny Curtis.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, that's good. So then, what was it? Was it the referee or was it Teddy Long? Somebody.
No, Teddy Long's music played, and said, that got a pop because it was Atlanta.
And he was playing it up, and he was doing his shucking and jiving, and he turned it into a battle royal that Kali won, of course. It comes down to three people. The two guys who were in the original match and the great Kali, and Kali wins.
Yeah.
And this might be worth noting, too, actually, kind of skipping ahead. Normally, during the actual WrestleMania card, they'll show a video package. Okay, this is from our perspective. We didn't see anything that looked like an instant replay. We saw all the goofy video packages like Tribute to the Troops and Brought to You by Slim Jim and all that bullshit. But we didn't see anything that looked like an instant replay on the screen. So I apologize if they showed this on pay-per-view and we just didn't see it. But they didn't acknowledge that Daniel Bryan-Sheamus match via video during the main card whatsoever. So it's like not only did they cut him off the main card to make room for a fucking awful match that we're going to talk about later, but then they just shit on him during the pay-per-view by not even showing their videos.
So that happened. Kali won, of course, God, everyone's all happy. Then they cut down, the Justin Roberts come out and says, we've got 6 minutes, which I thought was a weird time to announce. I always figured, we've got 5 minutes, we've got 2 minutes, right. One. But six to me was just weird. Then they put a countdown clock up. So I was was it necessary?
Yeah, because they finished up that Battle Royal with probably about 15 minutes to go because they changed out the apron and the mat.
Yep.
And it was really weird. There was 6 minutes. It's like, hold off another minute and just say 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
That was really bizarre.
It is kind of fun to watch them change up things during live wrestling. Like, I remember one of those WrestleManias where MVP came out in the big inflatable tunnel. Watching them change out the mats for HDTV purposes when you've got like 27 guys walking around on your mat. You want to change it out before the main card so it looks good on TV, so there aren't footprints all over it. I'm trying to think of what else they had. Oh, this is kind of interesting, that video cube that was above the ring. During the show, during the matches, like during the intros, they would put the logos of the wrestlers and stuff, but during the matches, it was just this blue sky with white clouds floating around it. But if you can see it on screen, I was watching some of the screens around the arena. They had superimposed stuff on them, kind of like baseball games with the green screen in the background that turns into the advertisement when they're at bat. So, I don't know, just a couple of points of interest.
Well, and in another mat-changing note, I thought they did a good job because it was Well, no, I guess it was before the Cole and Lawler match. I thought it was smart of them to do the Hall of Fame inductees then. Because it was really, even though we had really good seats, because we were up just far enough on the lower level that we had a great perspective, but we were still close enough that, you know, the guys didn't look like midgets in the ring or anything like that.
Yeah, the tickets, I thought, were pretty good, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, the only thing that could have gone better was just being more centered, but I believe those were, like, 40 more bucks a pop or something like that.
And by the way, speaking of how guys don't look like ants or anything like that in the ring, I've seen him a dozen times now, and Big Show against anybody still looks like somebody. They took a big, like, one of those rubber LJN action figures from the 80s and made him wrestle one of those little plastic ones from the 90s. He's still an impressive sight, even from a distance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when he was bumping around for, what, Heath Slater?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was telling.
I was going to get back to the point that they did the Hall of Fame inductions. They announced all those people because they knew that'd take a long time. So they had that happen before or in between for the Cole Lawler match, so that they had time to bail
and change.
Oh well, and I guess in another announcer's note is that normally they announce them coming down to ringside, but we saw Cole at the beginning of the event just scurry into the coal mine. Like, there were no intros whatsoever for any of the announcers.
They probably didn't want to ruin the pop that they would get for coming down to the ring for their actual match. They probably didn't want to scoop it.
Yeah, but the Hall of Fame announcements of, you know, that kind of rerun gave them time to get changed and come back out. So I just thought that was a good timing mechanism that they used.
Yeah. This is kind of interesting, too. So we're sitting around. I was going to lead into crowd reactions for the opening match, but that reminded me that the crowd that we were sitting around, the row in front of us, was this family full of total, like, I'm going to spend $100 on John Cena merchandise. I've got a seven-year-old kid here in front of us that's jumping up and down like an idiot. There are like three kids behind us that were like, kick him in the skull! And then the littler brother who was three was like, yeah, kick him in the skull!
it was like that ROH show where the kid was swearing the whole time.
Uh-huh.
But, I mean, obviously on a much lesser note, but it was just really funny to hear that tiny voice telling him to just kick him in the skull and have it over with.
Yeah.
Like, that's really wrong. I mean, you understand that's awful, right?
Yeah. And that was probably the best crowd we've ever sat around. Like, nobody was bad. Like, people were actually talking. The parents were talking to us for the most part. Well, I mean, not, like, constantly, but they did say stuff to us on a fairly regular basis, and they were nice with us, even though we're dropping F-bombs left and right.
Yeah, I'm trying to get a wife and children. Chris Benoit chant started. Sorry, that was my fault, Atlanta.
I'm trying not to go all over, but on the part of merchandise with the John Cena thing.
Yeah.
We tried three different stands to find a basic WrestleMania 27 t-shirt, and they were all sold out because they were actually kind of nice this year. Not like the trashy, here's all the wrestler people.
And to qualify one point that Jeremy isn't making again, is that it was the WrestleMania 27 I Was There t-shirt, as opposed to any of the ones with the guys on them.
Yeah, nobody over the age of 10 should be wearing a t-shirt with another man's face on them, let alone a collage of faces and bodies.
So we were talking about it as we were walking up, about how WWE should have merchandise stands outside to basically help along their cause. Well, lo and behold, as we're walking in the Georgia Dome, there are two big-ass tents of merchandise set up outside. Mm. And so we figured, all right, this will be an easier way of doing it. So go up, try and get the WrestleMania shirt, the WrestleMania shirt I want, and gone. Which I thought was very weird for an event shirt to be gone, but whatever. The other striking thing, though, was Alberto Del Rio's shirts were sold out, and The Miz's shirt was sold out. There were plenty Undertaker, Triple H, Rey Mysterio. Now, that could be because they brought more stuff.
Right.
But this became a theme as we went to different stands. The John Cena shit was flying. I mean, I know it's one of those terms, but the people in front of us spent $120 on a shirt, headband. I think a headband and wristband came together, a necklace, and a foam finger, and a hat. So I'm like, wow, that's a lot of money to throw down on that stuff. Go inside, still trying to find a shirt. They don't have it in another stand. Ugh, whatever, go to another stand. in the whole time, all you see are red foam fingers, red t-shirts, hats, wristbands, that goofy, I saw that goofy light-up necklace thing. No, that was $10. So you got to figure, this, we're standing in line again. The guy in front of us gets a shirt, a hat. So the shirt's 30, a hat's 30, that goofy necklace, the headband, wristband, and then a foam finger. They threw down $100. Somebody else comes up, gets almost the exact same thing. They throw $120 down. Someone else comes up. And this is all John Cena stuff. Mm-hmm. It was a real eye-opener. It's for me, at least, yeah, just how much he sells.
And it was kind of interesting, too. Like, even with the crowd around us, the kid was wearing John Cena wristbands and a headband. I think he had an old Cena shirt on. Well, when Rock comes out and starts doing the whole Fruity Pebbles things again, you could just look into the crowd in front of us, and there were a ton of new red John Cena t-shirts. And then we saw the purple ones, the orange ones. We saw a couple of the ones that were the AWA takeoff. Like, his shirts were everywhere. But even when Rock was doing the Fruity Pebbles chant,
Yabba Dabba.
And Yabba Dabba, like, even the kid with the John Cena gear on was going along with it.
Maybe that speaks more to The Rock than to John Cena or these fans. Because The Rock had the crowd in the palm of his hand.
Mm-hmm.
And
that, yeah, that was one of the chill-inducing nights, moments of the night, too, when he came out and that music hit.
Yep.
It was like, just wow. And you don't... I don't know how it came across on TV, but in person, the stage setup was just black. Well, then, when someone would come out, it turned out they were all... I don't know if they were LEDs or LCDs,
yeah, I think
whatever
they were LEDs.
It looked like a sheet. But then all of a sudden, you knew it was going to be TV monitors, but that was impressive. I mean,
yeah.
Punk stuff came out and had the lightning bolts come down.
Yeah.
And his little shaky cam and RKO, the 19-0 pops up.
Cody Rhodes and his...
that was great.
The headlines, the grotesque and disfigured. Oh, my God.
And they slowed his music down, which I thought was great,
yeah,
too.
And, like, I even like Rey Mysterio and the multiple masks flashing. And actually, to kick off the pay-per-view matches... Alberto Del Rio, they drove that car up from the ramp below, and they had that great video of supposed to be a mansion, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
It's just cool. So much of it was cool, and I was going to get into the crowd reactions of these matches. I mean, we don't need to babble on too much about all the matches, but we were surprised they started the card off with the World Heavyweight title match, but the crowd reacted great to everybody. They booed Ricardo, and a lot of people cheered Alberto, which makes sense, since then they all bought his goddamn shirts. Christian got a good reaction. Edge got a good reaction. It was a quick match, and it wasn't, like, memorable. You know, I'm not going to... A year from now, I'm not going to be like, God damn, I hope there's a match on the card as good as Edge versus Alberto. But it was okay.
I like that match, because we were talking about when we were leaving yesterday about how everyone that was the one match where it had all those outside components.
Yeah.
And everything just fit nicely instead of overwhelming everything. So that's why I like that one.
They put it together well. It wasn't, like... amazing or anything, but it was a good match and they put it together well.
Yeah.
And to backtrack a little bit on the whole set design, my whole theory about it being like the architectural elements of the city that they were hosting got completely blown out of the water as soon as we walked down there. And the funny thing was when I was looking at everything, and I know I didn't post all six of the pieces that I wanted to, but none of them really kind of fit what I'd call a WWE theme, which is probably why they went pretty generic, really. Like, I mean, it was cool looking. Visually, it was awesome looking to see that stuff.
Yeah.
But it still was pretty plain to just have, like, a bent sheet of LEDs that you could put graphics on.
I did love the huge WrestleMania logo hanging from above. That was really cool. And the fact that it looked like they took the arches from the Orlando set and, like, used three or four of them.
See, that's what I was wondering, what they do with these sets when they're done.
Yeah.
And especially with technology now, and I know it sucks for you because it ruins the architectural part, but I wonder if this is just the way they're going to do it. Because you can turn that screen into anything you want.
Yeah.
You take scaffolding from some of the old ones.
But that was the thing. That was the other reason why I brought up that whole idea. Was the previous year in Phoenix, they had a bunch of screens, but it ended up looking like a pyramid. Mm-hmm. So it kind of had this Aztec / Southwest kind of feel to it. So I'm like, oh, maybe they'll do something like that again. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I had even looked at some of the other previous years other than the one in Orlando that we went to. I don't think Detroit had much, but I looked at a bunch of them, and it's just like, you know, they had some type of a theme for the most part, and this just wasn't one of those.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, that you're exactly right, yeah. Oh, what was the next?
Match two, I think.
Wait. Before we go to the next one. The Edge destroying the car at the end, that was one of the more vicious car beatings we've seen in a while. He stabbed the car. Most of the time, they break out the...
Robert Blake.
the headlights.
Yeah.
And the windows. He was stabbing the car. I mean, the hood, the trunk, the side. He did an elbow drop on top of the car, which was kind of funny.
Kind of flare-ish.
Yeah. And then he decided, oh, yeah, I got to break out the windows, too, to make it look more impressive.
So, right.
That's just, you know.
And then they did, they swept off the stage. they got rid of the car, and then they swept off the stage while they were showing the video package for something or other. It wasn't for the next match, but anyway, yeah, they're sweeping off the stage. It's fun to me to watch the stage hands go through all that stuff in between matches and, you know, blow up the big, awesome inflatable letters and, and sweep this up and change out the apron or mat.
All right, so next match was Ray and Cody. This match didn't get no one. Cody got a polite response,
and everyone stood up for Ray.
Yeah, but like you were talking about the stage, the Ray with the face, and they kept flashing all that.
Yeah,
that was real. That was actually really cool.
Yep.
And one more thing on the set design, and this is just me. I was looking at the WrestleMania part hanging there, and I just wondered if one of those letters fell. How big of a disturbance that thing would cause?
Yeah.
Because oh boy.
So, WrestleMania 27.
Yeah, and then I'm like, well, would they be able to clean this thing up in time for us to watch the rest of the card? And, you know, can we just leave them under there? They ain't going anywhere.
The show must go on.
Yeah, exactly. Not for those guys, but you know, whatever.
Yeah, Ray and Cody was good. I was surprised to see Cody win. Cody's great, though. He's so funny with his, you know, putting his hand in the camera is awesome.
Yeah, no, well, there was that, and one of the other subtle things I thought that was funny was when he got into the ring and he was waiting for Ray to come out, he kept himself on one knee with his face against the turnbuckle to hide it the whole time.
Yeah. The match got about the reaction you'd think it would. They popped for the important stuff.
Yeah.
But,
and I think most of the crowd was stunned Cody won.
Yeah.
That's when I lost my voice, or started to. Yeah.
Yeah. What do we get next? The 8-man tag?
Yeah, 8-man tag was next.
Okay, what was after that?
Punk versus Orton.
So Punk came out.
No, go ahead. You're right.
No, I mean, who gives a fuck? I told Eric, the introductions took longer than the match.
Yeah.
There's no reason, well, I know you're going to disagree, but there was no reason that couldn't have been on the Battle Royal part. I know it's Big Show and Kane, but...
You know what? Because this match doesn't count, we actually missed the Roddy Piper Snoop Dogg bullshit. I kind of, after I saw Roddy Piper in that skit and they only announced the three guys on Big Show's team, I was like, you think Roddy Piper would come out and wrestle? And then it was Kofi. And then we move on to the next match.
He was amped up to be out there, too.
Oh, yeah, he did that big flying cross, I don't know what it was, because his legs are so fucking spindly and goofy and he has no control over his body and he's a piece of shit wrestler who doesn't deserve a spot on the card.
To the ring, and he was jumping all over the place. I was like, calm down, man. Act like you've been there. This isn't your first time.
I've had it with that guy. I can't. Yeah. I'm glad that
Eric may think he's uncoordinated, but I dare Eric to do anything. So you know, that's okay. He did kind of screw up that crossbody though. Like it was like he didn't want to commit for some reason or another. Like it was like he had kind of pitched himself back instead of going forwards into the guys, and it was like he kind of turned his body at the last minute to not completely screw things up. I mean, that was one thing that he just completely fucked.
He's lucky that in 3 years he hasn't injured somebody flopping around like an idiot like that. He could hit somebody in the face with his knee, break their nose, but anyway, he's an idiot. We've already talked longer about the match than the match lasted, so Punk came down to a nice solid round of split reaction. Orton came out to a huge pop, of course, because he's a baby face that acts like a heel constantly.
Yeah, and Orton's music still just come on, grow on me.
Well, I swear to God, the second line in the pre-chorus is, I see hippos dying. I see, it's like something like, I hear babies crying, I see hippos dying. So yeah, I guess maybe we shouldn't go to the zoo today because all the hippos are dead. somebody mentioned this on Twitter, I think, and maybe somebody mentioned it on a .net or a Torch or something like that, but CM Punk's facial expressions carried this match. Up until the end, obviously, yeah, where the Super RKO came out. Which, if you think about it, kind of made sense, because he's been, Randy Orton's been doing that DDP, Diamond Cutter out of nowhere thing for the last few months, so when he's nailing the RKO off of Evan Bourne's Shooting Star, and then able to do it off this the springboard clothesline that Punk does, kind of makes sense, but that was a good match. It was the first one that really felt like a WrestleMania match, and shows how awesome Punk is.
Yeah, to me, honestly, that was probably the match of the night, which was something that we can probably get into. Anything on after this.
Yeah.
Honestly, like, to me, at this point, the card had held up its end of the bargain. Like, it was nothing. And none of these matches I felt were like the main attraction matches. As much as I like Edge and I think Del Rio is going to be really good.
Oh, I see heroes dying. I still say it sounds like hippos.
I taste blood that's drying. I feel tension rising. This is also by Rev Theory, so whatever.
I showed you.
Yeah.
Yeah, to me, this is when... the best word that I could use to describe the rest of the card to me was bizarre.
Yep.
After this match, like, I honestly thought that that was the best match, and then everything after this was just head scratching in one manner or another.
Oh, real quick too, I thought I was going to be cool and start a CM Punk chant over on our side of the arena, and I think I was the first one to do it. It was like the bell rang and I screamed it one time. It's not like it was hard to do because those chants took up everywhere around the arena throughout the match. I think more so than, like, RKO chants, actually.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and also, on the chant front, we figured out how this John Cena stuff starts. All you have to do is...
one guy in your group...
Yes.
And it's almost always a group of guys. There was one guy that got designated to do the pro-Cena chant, and then, like, you could hear his 12 buddies would go, Cena sucks. Yep. And then he'd yell, go Cena, or... yeah, and let's go kid, Cena.
And then the kids would join in.
Yep. So I think
yeah,
it's...
Yeah, the kids wearing John Cena gear.
And the women that like brought them.
Yeah, so just more proof that a lot of the male audience that are sporting John Cena shirts really do support him, but they're just doing this just because they like being in on the act. So, well, and I guess that was another thing that... It just seemed like a lot of people were in on it, or are in on it more, even though there are definitely people that still believe this stuff is real too easy.
Yeah. And going back to the family thing, that was one of the most into it families I've ever seen.
In front of us?
From John Cena kid to his mom to probably his aunt. The husbands, though, were just kind of like, eh.
Arms crossed, sitting there laughing at our jokes.
Yeah, until John Cena lost. Then it seemed like the uncle or the dad, whichever one it was, he was like, yeah!
Yeah.
But we'll get to that in a second. Yeah. But that was the highlight of my night.
Oh, real quick, too, I think we've skipped over the Rock and Stone Cold thing backstage, which just for what I mean, it got a pop from the crowd.
Yeah. And it had to happen, too.
Yep. Well, and it was cool, too, because you could tell that they were cordial, but they also viewed each other as enemies, and they just wanted to not get into it with each other that night.
Yep.
Yeah, so I thought that was really cool, actually. So
what was next?
Punk Orton, and then it was Cole and Lawler.
Oh, yeah. So they did
after the Hall of Fame.
Which was nothing.
Yeah.
Like we said, that gave them time, Cole and Lawler, time to go backstage and get into their outfits. Lawler was wearing one of those, like, circa 1979 Memphis outfits, which was kind of awesome. Cole comes out in his orange.
Team Cole,
and... Powell, on Powell's side, he said that the speech killed the crowd. Cole came out and cut the speech that killed the crowd. It didn't. I don't know what he was listening to, but the crowd was into everything that Cole said, booing him and screaming what and what.
Yeah.
Swagger comes out and does the push-ups, and then you hear the glass break, and he starts to drive the ATV over
that
him.
That camera angle of Swagger doing the push-ups, the glass breaks, and
you see
Swagger gets like a prison bitch look on his face, like, I'm getting raped in the ass. Like, oh my god, this bald man's going to rape me.
Yeah, because it was perfect, because they were like panned in right on his face.
And you can see the 316 on the huge wall behind him when the glass broke. And then you were talking about him driving the ATV down the ramp.
Yeah, and it's awesome because dude almost wrecks that thing every time. And you swear he's going to run over someone, just not even on purpose, like just by accident, because he just tools that thing around the ring so easily. So he almost bails it off the left-hand side of the ramp as he's coming down, and then I swear he almost runs over one of the tech guys running the cords for one of the cameramen.
It's so funny to watch him do that, though, because you can tell he's having such a good goddamn time driving that thing around. You know what, though? The match itself was kind of plodding. You could see that on pay-per-view, obviously, but Jerry Lawler just rolled around on his back like a turtle the whole time. While Cole, like, delivered some of the shittiest moves. And it's funny, too, the crowd starts that "you can't wrestle" chant, and it's like, duh, that's the point, obviously.
And I felt like maybe Michael Cole, who has had a trainer now for the last month, could have been able to throw, a punch.
Or not a just kick. Like, not tippy-toe all over Jerry Lawler's ankle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or he could have put his feet on Jerry Lawler's ankle when he was pressing down on it on the ropes. Something. You know, I mean, would have been too much to ask of him to actually make contact with Jerry Lawler.
Right.
I mean, I know that he shouldn't be Shawn Michaels at this point, but he could at least be Snooki.
And it was nice too. There were little Jerry Lawler chants or Jerry chants that popped up here and there. But by the end of the match, finally, the whole arena got into it and really got a good Jerry chant started.
I think the problem, this is what the girl said too, was why isn't he just out there beating his ass?
Right.
And that's really what the crowd wanted. And when they didn't get it, like, they got a taste of it with him doing the handshake through the coal mine.
Yeah.
But when they didn't get the sustained just ass beating, and this is where, and I know this is just tired already, but this is one of the matches where blood would have been much needed. To see Michael Cole just a bloody mess, I think the crowd would have, just the slightest trickle, the crowd would have just gone right back into the match.
A trickle, maybe. A bloody mess would have made him almost sympathetic. It's like, oh, poor little Michael Cole. Honestly, I think too much blood would have overdone it.
I don't know. They seemed like, it just seemed like there was not, well, bloodthirsty is, use that term. It just seemed like they wanted him to get his face smashed in.
Yeah.
And when it didn't happen, everyone's like, this is just weird. It wasn't the emotional exchange.
No, the emotional release
that everyone wanted.
No.
That, and then the ending to the match really ended up overshadowing Cole. Like, okay, Cole ends up getting the cheap victory because of the Raw GM. Whatever. Well, that kind of kills some of the, hey, Jerry Lawler got the win, so he got the victory over the big bad heel who's been teasing him for the last month and a half. And then to have like another like 5-minute segment with Austin stunning Booker T after the Spinneroony and Josh Matthews after the reverse decision, that was just more crowd kill.
It was, like, really, because it was confusing. It's like, why did we miss something on commentary?
Yeah,
I gotta work backwards though. When Lawler had Cole in the ankle lock and he was furiously tapping out, and Austin did the real deliberate "do you give up," and then he waits and everyone kind of realized what he said because we have to read lips in the arena on the Titantron. And when he did it again and about 10% of the crowd's yelling it with him, "do you give up," I was like, please God, do it one more time so the whole arena will do it. And then he didn't. He just called for the bell. It's almost, I hate to say it, but that's almost indicative of the whole show. Like, I felt, I'm skipping ahead to an overall belief of the thing, but I thought this show was weirdly anticlimactic, and that was just one example of that. It's like, oh, you can't like do it one more time, Austin, world-class performer, and give the crowd what they want.
Yeah, and when that match, I had to shut my phone off because it died, or started to die, but as the match ended, I got a text from Dusty, somewhere from the Andes Mountains. What kind of bullshit was the finish of the Michael Cole match? And that was it. So I hope like no bears or inclement weather got to him. Oh, it's funny, he got pay per view up there. So.
his neighbor came with him.
Yeah.
So I don't know, and then I don't know what's next.
You already determined Dusty was the only survivor.
Oh, that's right. Sorry. Dusty's neighbor's satellite feed.
Well, I bet you, what's her name? Doesn't she still have a bar up there?
Who's that?
From Indiana Jones. Shit. It would have been funny if I... Karen Allen. Would have been much funnier if I'd actually remembered her name.
There was a joke you were going to tell us last night.
It was about Michael Cole's tattoos.
It was about Michael Cole. Why does Michael Cole have more jail tattoos than MVP, who was actually in jail?
That's right.
I don't get it. He looked like he was from the ghetto. I don't understand.
And they're just all those little tiny and like oddly placed. You know, it's
they're
like
just faces that looked horrendous. It looked like, honestly, he went to a jailhouse parlor to get that shit done.
Yeah, I need.
They
I
were
want,
terrible.
I want my oldest baby's face on my kidney. I want my youngest daughter up on my latissimus dorsi. Give me a dream catcher on my shoulder while I'm here.
A dream catcher?
Dream catcher.
Fuck, unbelievable.
Just terrible.
Anyway, yeah, that's hilarious.
I also know that Michael Cole has a perfectly round beer belly as well.
Oh.
Outfit perfectly accentuated.
No, you're right.
Yeah, no, it wasn't huge. It was just like this perfect, like, literally, if you think spare tire, mm-hmm. It literally looked like it, like, everywhere. It looked like there was an equal amount of fat mm-hmm. between his back and his stomach going the whole way around.
So what else? All right. What were we actually talking about?
Well, I think we were moving on to the next match until Eric actually remembered what I forgot, and my joke wasn't nearly as funny as I wanted it to be. But, Undertaker Triple H was after that.
And if this match had a dick, it would be Raw from getting sucked all night long by people like Powell and Keller and Caldwell and even people
too.
On Twitter and...
On Facebook. Like, we were completely confused how anyone could review the match as well as they did. Because we were sitting on our hands until Triple H gave Undertaker the tombstone, which was the first time that really the crowd got into it. Like, the crowd wasn't buying the near falls before that.
No, they weren't. Because that stuff has been, for the last 4 or 5 years, has been so played out to the point of being cliched. You know a chokeslam isn't going to pin anybody. Here, let me break down the match for everybody. Triple H throws two punches, ducks one punch, throws two punches, ducks another punch. Undertaker tears apart the Spanish announce table, then they do a move, and then they wait a minute. And then they do another move, and then they wait a minute. And I swear to God, if that match was 30 minutes long, there were only 30 moves in the whole match.
I said at one point...
If there were 30.
Yeah. This is the longest 5-minute match I've seen. And then it kept going... And then it turned out to be the longest, 30 minutes for 10 minutes of action.
You actually said, Jeremy, at about the 5-minute mark, after literally 6 punches had landed, the stairs had been torn apart like a minute into the match.
The coal mine's destroyed.
And then they're slowly taking apart the tables. In 5 minutes, you said, they're already in third gear. And they never, like, they immediately went to third gear and never got out of third gear.
Who was talking about the microphones?
Oh, no, that was me, because, like, when Triple H is taking apart the desk, he gets out the monitors okay.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was hilarious the Undertaker decided to throw his monitor from the Spanish announce table about into the third row. I hope someone got to take that home.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, Triple H gets the two monitors out, and then there's those mics or whatever.
There's lights.
Oh, the little lights.
It's even
like,
worse. They're lights. They're the bendy lights.
He took forever in a day trying to get those things off. And then he throws Undertaker up there, and there's still, like, a MacBook sitting there. So Undertaker's, like, laying on top of the MacBook. He, like, gets up at some point just enough so that he can slide the MacBook onto the floor.
Right. Yeah. I'm sure Lawler was thrilled about that $1,200 laptop hitting the floor that hard.
I guess with this match, I don't understand why it's okay for Triple H and Undertaker to go outside, use all these parlor tricks, but when TNA does it, everyone rails on them. If it was Jeff Jarrett and Sting that did this, instantly they get clowned. This match would get clowned to death. And there's no bigger TNA haters, well, whatever, but we don't give TNA credit for anything. But if this was a TNA match, this would be a one-star, absolute waste of time. Pay-per-view was terrible.
I was thinking the same thing. Like, if there were two indie guys out there that could if they watched this match enough and could recreate this match and even maybe have, like, the referee with a little earpiece in listening to the match and be like, okay, now do a spine buster and lay there for 90 seconds and then do a fucking spine buster again and lay there for 90 seconds. Even
lay there for 90 seconds.
Yeah. The crowd would absolutely shit on it. It would be the worst match in pro wrestling history. Yet these two assholes with no energy, barely any drama. I swear to God, if there was any drama, it was all manufactured by Jim Ross. How this match did not get completely shit on by everybody. You're right. Yeah. You're exactly right, Kevin. Like, nothing was believable. The stupid 10 punches into the last ride and all that bullshit.
Well, you got the, a pedigree, 3 minutes into the match?
Yeah.
Well, you've already gone to the finish, your finisher 3 minutes into the match.
And then another one, 6 minutes later. Yeah. And then another one, 9 minutes later.
And the other thing that I pointed out when we were watching is that Triple H didn't do some of his regular spots. And I don't even think Undertaker did some of his regular spots. Like, Triple H didn't do the high knee. He didn't do the face buster. Like, there were some basic moves that they could have started in the ring with.
Well, he has 5 moves. You just named 2 of them. Yeah. The third one is the pedigree, which he did 5 times.
Well, and
the other one, one of them is the spine buster that he did twice in a row. And the other one is a punch that he did 4 times in a row at the beginning of the match.
Well, he usually does that running knee, too. Well, the knee drop, where he usually gives the crotch chop, and he does a knee drop. Like,
let's not forget the sledgehammer.
Yeah, it's Triple H knee move bingo over here, and we all lost. There was no blackout.
Well, but there were a couple of times where Undertaker was down. It's just like, oh, okay, this would make sense for him to, drop a knee. Like, you don't need to just sit there against the ropes and just go, I can't believe he hasn't been pinned yet. Mm-hmm. Well, keep on hitting the... Well, and that was the other thing, is that Triple H was in control so much of the late end of that match, and he's just sitting there against the ropes. It's just like, do more to him.
Yeah.
Like, you've been in control for, the last 5 to 10 minutes. Why are you sitting there?
Yeah.
Like, you don't look like you're... And I guess I started thinking about, UFC fights. Like, you can tell when some guy's gassed out. Like, Triple H was sitting there, and he wasn't even breathing heavy. He's just sitting there against the ropes.
Yeah.
Doing absolutely nothing. Like, at least... those guys, when they're gassing out, are trying to do something.
Yeah, yeah.
But Triple H is just...
Yeah, Big John McCarthy would make him do something.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think he doesn't referee you mentioned anymore. It, but this is where Jim Ross had to have been selling this match. Mm-hmm. Because, and I don't think it'll change now, but I wonder if... There's no two ways to go about it, really, but if we had seen the match on TV with commentary and then saw it live, I know it's impossible to do. Because... it would be different. You go, well, wait a minute, that's not the same match I watched on TV.
I have the feeling, it's like reading a book and then watching the movie.
Yeah. And then, but now, maybe Jim Ross will be able to change our minds, but, oh boy, I think Kevin just...
No, that was me.
Eric just laid a Triple H.
Sweet, merciful God. I'm sorry, the eggs at the buffet were better than the Triple H match.
But no, it got to the point where you start to question, because there was no actual wrestling involved. And I understand that they were trying to do I'm bigger than you, or I'm tougher, I'm going to do what it takes, blah, 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 blah. Well, that's fine. When you get to that point where you've got the guy worn down, they were worn down 3 minutes into this match, and it didn't make any sense. And then, as everyone else is bringing up, they punch, he goes down. 90 seconds later, he goes and punches him again. So, that was fruit. It's all right. And that was a burp anyways. It's kind of tasty on the way back up. But everything they did, and... I think I read one review of it where it was a classic WWE main event. No, it's not. If you go back and look at some of the classic main events, if you want to put it that way, Austin Rock, they didn't do a move, lay around for 2 minutes, get up, do one other move, lay around for 2 minutes.
Yeah, even goddamn Hogan and Warrior had a fucking knuckle lock for a while. They're at least engaged with each other, not just laying around watching the other one sleep.
Yeah.
Now, it looked like a goddamn, looked like summer camp. It's like, ooh, I'm going to lay here and watch them sleep.
Yeah, now, the one thing
Maybe that's just my own issue.
The one thing I will give credit to for Triple H in this is when it finally got to the end where you've had 37 spine busters, 127 pedigrees, 4 tombstones, you know, a wet punch. Willy, and an Indian rug burn.
How did you forget about the purple nurple?
Yeah, I mean, and then Triple H is hitting Undertaker over and over and saying, just stay down. Kind of, you know, going back to the Shawn Michaels match. I thought that was good because Triple H's facial expressions were really good in there.
Don't be giving him too much credit.
Well, no, I mean, I'll give him credit where he deserves it. But, you know, we've spent the last 15 minutes of a 45-minute audio so far railing on this guy. And,
well, and I guess the other part that was kind of interesting to talk about railing on the guy, it was something that I, both Jeremy and I thought that he was just going to pass out in the Hell's Gate.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know if we said that in a preview, but we ended up saying, oh, he said he's going to die trying. Well, A, somebody completely and utterly fucked up the Hell's Gate. Because
it was not applied right.
It was not applied correctly. It's more like a what the fuck is the actual name of that move?
The Gogo Plata?
Yeah. And
can you
just make
that up?
No.
No.
No, I just couldn't remember the name of it. It's called
Dan Yogurt. Okay.
It's called Seven Things of Dan and Yogurt. That we stole from downstairs and put in our fridge.
That we couldn't find after midnight last night.
Pricks in Atlanta, fuck.
We'll get to that in a second.
I actually did kind of end up liking Triple H doing the light tap out at the end. Because instead of him dying trying, he kind of has got to go back on his word. Because he didn't die trying. Like, he, you know... But I don't know, it's Triple H, so he might not end up really acknowledging that or something. Or he might just say that, you know, Undertaker's that great or something.
Well, and Undertaker's the one who died trying because he's the one that got carted out while Triple H was able to walk away.
With his eyes open. And
I was waiting for him to give a big thumbs up, like an injured Steeler or something.
Like a hilarious, the Taker. That's what I was telling you when we walked away at the end of that match. That's why it seemed like a letdown because he didn't do the pose. He didn't do the tongue, the eyes roll back, the classic Undertaker pose at the end.
Yeah, and that was just another thing that added to the bizarreness of the night, is that the guy that lost and had a submission move applied for what seemed like 5 minutes was the guy who walks out of the ring. Like, Undertaker was on his back taking no punishment for at least 2 to 3 minutes. Like, there's no reason he shouldn't be able to get up and get out of there on his own.
Mm-hmm.
Like, unless Triple H broke his leg at some point, like, there's no reason.
His arm. Oh, never mind. Like,
yeah, well.
Triple H injury.
Yeah, Triple H's arm was just hanging there for 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, everything was hanging there for 30 minutes.
I forgot what you said, damn it. There's something you said during the match. Oh, boy. So,
dead air.
Okie dokie. Yeah. Well. Do we want to keep on moving to
we're running out of time.
The next match was the Snooki match.
I was right. Buffer match, baby.
Yep, Eric was right. Jeremy and I were partially correct in that Sheamus and Daniel Bryan were going to open the pay-per-view. we just didn't think it was going to be before the pay-per-view actually started.
Right. You know what? This match lasted longer than the 8-man tag, and it was probably just as good.
I think everyone was at least surprised that, as someone put it on Twitter, that Snooki was stealing moves from the great Muta.
Yeah. Snooki was booed on her way down. Polite applause for the couple of athletic moves she did. Polite applause for the replays. And then the close-up of her after the match, she got booed again.
Yeah.
It's like, you fucking schizophrenic assholes.
Well,
once again, booing... Well, yeah, seriously. Like, the fact that she jiggled her way out of her outfit and...
they show the replay of her handspring moonsault and whatever it is, and you just saw those sloppy tits just going... and then her fucking gut falls out of her shirt.
And then they sped it up real quick. Like, we can't subject our fans to this shit. This is PG.
I really wish I could remember what you said during that Triple H Undertaker match.
Well, Yeah. No, unfortunately, I did not get to sleep with Snooki this weekend, so...
Yeah, real unfortunate.
Yeah, well... Yeah, because we get crabs out here where we're sleeping. That's yeah. Great, thanks.
Yeah, I would have been in the other bed pulling a Triple H watching you lay there.
What you doing? That doesn't sound natural.
No.
All right, so up next, yeah, they went to the John Cena Miz match, and Eric said it is 10:40 when they got to the introductions before that. I was like, wow, really? This is not going to be a long match.
Now, on a card where the debate was what's going to be the headliner, what's going to finish the show, I thought they did a phenomenal job of nailing home the fact that this should be the main event. Those two video packages at the beginning of the match, especially Miz's, was great with the Hulk Hogan and the whoever else, Ric Flair champion, and then he's then interspersed with like clips of Tough Enough, and yeah,
because that to me was the Miz's video package was the video package of the night. Like they always do a good job with them,
yep.
But that one stood out because of the shadow of him just kind of pressing the buttons in the truck.
Yeah.
And kind of doing a, to me, I guess I think of Robot Chicken anytime I see a bank of TVs with a bunch of different things going on them.
Yeah.
So it was kind of cool just seeing him, and they just timed it right where he was pressing the buttons. It was kind of the next phase of the Miz evolution. I thought that was awesome.
And then they trotted out the choir, and they did the whole preacher thing. They went...
That's from a DMX song.
Yes, it was.
Okay, yep. All right. No idea.
Yeah.
I found that on. So.
Yeah. No, they.
I am way too lily white to know what a DMX song is.
I know
is,
what a
so.
DMX is.
Yeah,
so. He's in jail, motherfucker.
So they had, they had the choir. They had the video package with the I pray to Jesus every day, and Jesus give me strength and all this stuff. And then John Cena come. Go ahead.
The two guys behind us.
Yeah.
The two black guys behind us. And they were cracking us up most of the time. They were always cheering for the opposite guys. So during like Triple H and Undertaker, he's like, I told you H ain't winning. Oh, you don't know shit. Shut up. They're jawing back and forth. Triple H loses, and they're just talking shit. Well, when the preacher guys came out, they're talking about the choir and all this, and then they get done, and everyone starts booing.
Uh-huh.
And like, oh, you can't boo Prayer. You can't boo Prayer.
That's awesome.
No, that is just wrong. I'm not booing Prayer. And all of a sudden the guy's like, who cares? Boo it.
God, that's fucking phenomenal.
Those guys were a lot of fun.
Yeah, they were.
Title belt kept hitting me all night. But,
oops. Yeah, that little kid's foam finger was hitting me, but he was having fun and spent a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then
he had a lot of fun.
Well, yeah. And then they broke out the red, white, and blue John Cena Titantron, and all I could think was they went totally Hulk Hogan, Three Commandments, train, say your prayers, eat your vitamins, and wave that fucking American flag thing with John Cena. Possibly purposely to the point of overkill to where he would just get roundly booed live.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked, man, because you know what? There are a lot of kids there, but let's be honest, WrestleMania is not a kids' event. Yeah. It's an adult event. Well, you know, the kids can be like, let's go to Monday Night Raw.
Honestly.
I think the families take the kids to Monday Night Raw, but the adults dominate WrestleMania, because if you listen to the crowd, you normally...
It was one-third against Cena and two-thirds for him.
I don't know about that. When he was getting booed, he was getting booed.
Two-thirds is too much.
Yeah, I think... I don't know. It wasn't even half and half, man. He was getting booed by everybody.
He got booed, soundly. But the other problem, and I don't think we've addressed this, is how big it was in the bottom. And I turned to you, and I was like, look up there.
Yeah.
I'd just be really curious to hear all the reactions on TV, because where we were, you could hear the lower bowl, but you couldn't hear shit from upstairs.
Right.
So they could have been cheering like mad. We would have never heard it.
Mm-hmm.
But no, that was... I think two-thirds is a little too much. I'd go almost 60-40. I don't think it was that big of a disparity in it. But also, just like we were saying earlier, it's the cool thing. The dude selling the John Cena foam fingers.
That would chant Cena sucks?
Yeah. You go, let's go Cena. He's going, Cena sucks. Holding it. Oh, $10.
Uh-huh.
Thank you. Here you go.
So. Yeah, well, and I guess the other reason why I say that, too, is just, again, the amount of... new red shirts that I saw in that crowd last night, to me, like, that was easily the shirt that I saw the most of. The second most, to me, would have been the new Apex Predator t-shirt from Randy Orton. Yeah.
Well,
and, like, the Cena shirts were just easy to spot because he uses Kellers. instead of black, except for that old AWA shirt.
But even that's got the gaudy red, white, and blue colors all over it. Yeah. Well, no matter what the ratio was and no matter how many red shirts there were in the crowd, John Cena, I'm pretty sure, got booed more heavily than anybody else on the card.
But The Miz also kind of didn't get that much of a reaction either.
That was, I thought, was weird. Because people were cheering when they saw his picture. When he came out, it was I guess, not the polite one.
It was confusion.
Yeah. I was like, well, we don't like John Cena, but you're still a dick.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, I don't want to boo you either, so...
Yeah.
And then he's in the ring and John Cena comes out. It was too late to make a decision.
That he's still wearing that tool bag of a leather jacket that in no way fits his character. And
yeah.
Alex Riley had the unmanliest vest of all time.
Yeah. But you know he was
still better than his old one.
Well, yeah. You know he was thrilled with that, too. Sweet, I got an awesome jacket.
Yep. Yeah, like his fucking stepbrothers.
Right.
But, so let's go to the end. The double countout.
I mean,
got no reaction because, first, I don't think anyone... I think people were kind of shocked, like, are you seriously? And then go, this can't be the end. And then everyone was looking to the top of the stage where the camera guy was waiting for Rock to come out.
Right, yeah, that's kind of
like
a dead giveaway.
Almost everyone was looking up at the top of the stage waiting for the Rock to come out.
Because
he had promised for weeks that he was going to do something during the main event. And it was almost weird to me that he wasn't down there at the beginning of it, honestly, to kind of act as an enforcer of sorts.
Right.
You know, like, they didn't really need that, but, you know, it was just kind of surprising because that, by the time he had done all of his skits, it was pretty early in the show when they had done the Mae Young skit, which was the latest of his skits.
Yeah.
That was the last one. So, I mean, they had that pretty early in the card. So, like, by the time the main event came around, Rock hadn't been on TV.
For about 3 hours.
Yeah, for about two and a half, three hours.
Yep.
So, I mean, it was kind of smart of them to keep him off of screen for that long.
Yes,
like, I mean, they were trying to build, I guess, a surprise that he was coming out at the end. But it failed miserably because he was telling everyone that he was going to do something in the main event.
Right, so it's like, okay, let's just wait patiently for him to come out. And the anticlimactic thing, too, it happened here again. We could probably sit here and rattle off 10 other ways to finish that match in some sort of draw or even Stevens thing that wasn't a double countout, something completely unbelievable. It's like the booking decisions on this show... You know, the horrible Triple H Undertaker match, the anticlimactic, what was the other one I talked about earlier? Something that, I don't know.
That was like an hour ago?
Sorry. Well, the Cole Lawler,
whatever.
All these things that just rubbed me the wrong way and struck me wrong. It's like, okay, now we get a double count out. You know, did a ref bump, have another ref run out, and then do some sort of double pin. Or something where there's more than just the referee slowly counting to 10 and then ringing the bell while two men lay on the concrete outside the barricade.
Yeah, off camera.
Yeah.
And that was another thing to me that went back to that Triple H Undertaker match, is that they did all these huge moves and were still moving around more than The Miz and John Cena were.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they did one big move, which was Cena going over the barrier with The Miz, and he was down. Like, Cena was on offense. Again, there was another one of those things where Cena was on offense for a while at that point, and he just does some running, flying tackle into the crowd, and he gets counted out. Like, John Cena didn't do a Superman whatsoever in that instance.
Yeah. They had a weird chemistry in this match, too. Was it you that said, what the hell's wrong with these guys?
Yes.
Like, halfway through it?
Well, it was even after they tripped, Cena tripped over Miz. They did something else that didn't quite mesh. Like, oh, I know, they were trying either a reversal of an Irish whip, or it was right before Cena went for his, like, two shoulder tackles into the shitty-looking Blue Thunder powerbomb thing. Like, he missed, or one of them ducked, or they accidentally bumped into each other when they weren't supposed to bump into each other. And, yeah, that's when I turned to you guys. I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with these two?
Yeah,
they just couldn't get their shit together.
Well, and I thought that was kind of with the Hell's Gate. Like, I thought that there were a number of spots. Like, this WrestleMania seemed like there were more blown spots than I've seen.
By the cameramen, too.
Oh, and by the cameramen. Because we didn't even talk about them completely the director cutting away from Christian bringing out the crowbars to fuck up the Rolls Royce.
Uh-huh.
Like, it just seemed like there were a bunch of little things that went wrong, because it seemed like there were more things wrong with the Cena Miz match than any of the other ones.
Which, I hate to say it, I shit on it here, but I like that match. Strangely, I kind of liked it.
That was fun.
Yeah.
The end is what took away from a decent match.
Yes.
It was the most normal of all those, because that's what I said, like, as soon as they got to that Cole Lawler match was when things got really kind of weird, was that point on. And, yeah, they actually just kind of had a regular wrestling match up to that point, even with a couple of blown spots. Mm-hmm. Like, it looked like a regular wrestling match, unlike, you know, Turtle Boy, Lawler, and Triple H and Undertaker taking unreal beatings and, a crappy six-person tag match.
Right.
Well, and I think the thing at the end was when Rock came out and then did the Raw GM thing, I thought that sort of hurt the momentum, too.
Which, I hate to say, like, I mean, when I said they were going to do it, I thought the same thing. I'm like, oh, that's going to make it seem more like a Monday Night Raw, because that's a total Raw gimmick. And you're like, you really think they're going to bring that to WrestleMania? And I was, I think outwardly I was like, yeah! And inwardly I was like, yeah.
The other thing, this is the Lawler-Cole match, was, to me, and I was like, it almost seemed like Josh Matthews was lying. Because maybe he's just a bad actor, but he seemed totally insincere when he was like, I'm sorry, you lost. I was like, well, what? And why doesn't anyone ever go to the goddamn laptop and look at it?
Right.
I mean, to make sure they're telling the truth, whatever else. I mean, I know it's kind of stupid, but Lawler went right next to it. And I'm like, look on the fucking screen to see what it says. Because I'm wondering if that's some sooner or later it's going to play out where someone's been lying the whole time. Or just something like that.
Yeah, people are just making up what they want to when they get up there. Yeah, no, I thought that was really strange, too, that Lawler was just right there and didn't take a look at it.
Right.
Or smash it or do something.
Yeah, you gotta wait for Rocky to smash it, of course.
Yeah, but then when Rock came down, and I like that they got straight to it. They didn't dick around with having more of a match or anything.
Yeah.
And as soon as Rock says no disqualification, I was like, oh, Cena's getting rock bottomed. That's the end of it.
Yeah.
And they got the crowd sent home happy, and now we have to go to Raw tonight. So.
Yeah, and Rock overturning it, we all kind of felt like somehow, some way, there's going to be another Cena-Miz matchup because the Raw GM didn't approve of the Rock's overriding authority on WrestleMania.
Yeah, he's like, that's not what I said in my email, this is what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I've got to admit, for a split second there when he goes, I think, and I'm just like, oh, is Rock admitting that he's the Raw GM? There was like a moment of doubt, and then I was like, oh no, that's right, he's just gonna do that. It doesn't matter what you think.
Yeah. Right. So we got out of Georgia Dome, came home, and came back to the hotel after taking Marta and everything else, and went to go get a bite to eat, and it,
If I could right now, I'd just put my balls on the microphone.
And microphone didn't do anything wrong.
And rub them right on it, because that's what Atlanta's late night scene can do to me.
Yeah.
This is a major city, a major metropolitan city that should have food establishments open and, bars open after midnight.
Yeah.
Not on a Sunday, baby. That's the Lord's Day.
Yeah, and restaurants that aren't open 24 hours, that charge you $36 for a regular meal, or $8 for grits and cheese.
Yeah, we go
$2 extra for the cheese.
We go to the front desk and we're like, is there anything around here we can eat at midnight? And the guy was like, I don't think so. And so it's like, okay, let's get the car out of parking and go drive up and down the street.
Valet parking. That's right.
Wendy's is open, but it's almost 1 in the morning. IHOP is open, but the waiting area is filled with smelly wrestling fans. We go the opposite direction. There ain't shit over there until Elise is like, what about that place? It's open 24 hours. It was actually the hotel restaurant and the hotel next door to us. So we park the car again. We don't tip the guy because the valet is not giving us any help either.
Yeah.
And then we go next door to this hotel restaurant. The lady gives us the really classy menu in the really classy restaurant.
It was the hard cardboard with, like, velvet tags to keep, the parchment
paper,
menu in. So you know you're in trouble.
And when the salads are $14, And the fucking the Belgian waffles are $14 at 1 a.m. You know you're in the wrong place.
Well, and it's just that kind of place being open 24/7 is just
it's misleading.
That's another one that's just bizarre to me. Like that just kind of added to the bizarreness of the night.
The type of place that's open 24/7 is Walmart, not a goddamn beautiful restaurant that would have had like a Marx Brothers movie filmed in it 70 years ago.
Yeah, and yet again another thing.
Perfect.
Nothing like Walmart was even open. Like we couldn't even find like a Target or a grocery store or anything that we could have gone and grabbed real food-like substances. Like, I wouldn't have cared if we would have gone and gotten some packaged bologna. Like, it would have been better than ending up eating some sweet and spicy chili Doritos.
Sun chips, fiber
rice,
bars.
Rice cakes.
And rice cakes. Yay!
So that goes back to why we just nabbed seven yogurts from the front desk. So just in case when we get out of Raw tonight and nothing is open again because the city blows, that, you know, we'll have something to eat because, well, you know, it's just not, it's not even just the city stuff. We were looking at doing tourist stuff today. Well, everything stops at 5 o'clock. Like, we have nothing to do between 5 o'clock and when we go to Raw at 9, and we don't feel like going back from downtown for like another 40 minutes of train ride to go back here to our place and then back downtown. So we've got 4 hours to kill because this hellhole can't have anything open longer than 5 p.m.
I would like to see the dolphins at the aquarium at 4:59, like, look at their watch.
Yeah. Light up a cigarette and go, fuck these guys. Sit the bars. Oh, they're closed. Never mind. Squeak, squeak. Let me get a shot. No? All right. Yeah, and we're staying in Buckhead, which is supposed to be the upscale, like, Richie part. Apparently the Richies go to bed way earlier than everybody else because this place was dead, and except for the cops who are daring you to make an illegal lane change at 2 a.m. when you're not even drinking.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking, ugh. Yeah, so that's been the biggest disappointment. It's not even like we want to go out and get shit wasted. Just want to go and hang somewhere.
Yeah, we literally, the night before, after the Hall of Fame, we went out, we grabbed 2 beers, and we grabbed some food afterwards. Because we hadn't eaten dinner because of how early it started and how early we needed to get downtown to get to the Hall of Fame. That's all we wanted to do again last night. And it just couldn't be a... Good Lord, who was it that time?
You know, when you got it, you got it.
Yeah.
And they were making fun of me. Well, at least
my nose was the stuff I don't smell anything. Nothing but lilacs and roses.
All right, how about overall thoughts on WrestleMania?
Regardless, I still had a good time last night. I mean, I'm hoarse. I got chills. Oh, God, I don't know how I forgot this. At the end of the Cena match. All right. We've established we have John Cena kid in the front row. And if there's nothing I like more than to see a child cry. As soon as Rock jumped in the ring, I grabbed Kevin by the shoulder and started pointing in the ring. Like, there's Rock. All right, Rock Bottom, this show's over. I lit up as if the Red Wings just won the Stanley Cup again, screaming at the top of my lungs. The guy, the uncle dad in front of me, is jumping up and out. All the Cena haters, I don't even think they were Miz fans, were going crazy. Yeah. Little John Cena fan in front of us. Wow, was he mad. Just standing there, scowling, not like the
Miz girl.
But I mean,
he was stunned silent.
He was a chubby kid on top of that with the bowl wavy haircut.
He looked like the kid from Two and a Half Men, like when the show first started.
Yes, with longer hair though.
Yeah,
or floofier hair.
Yeah,
tussleable. He didn't say anything. So as soon as I saw him just being sad, my bully in me just popped out, and I was like, "Ah!" Screaming, yelling. I can't see him. All that stuff. This kid finally, I mean, once I calmed down, he goes to his mom as Rock is celebrating, violently tugs on her sleeve and goes, "Can we go now?" He didn't say a word the rest of the time, and we bolted, so I didn't get to see what had happened. But I just wanted to antagonize all the little kids with Cena gear on, because this is your fault. It's your fault. So it was still a good time.
It was nice that we brought Jay Geldof along with us.
Jesus. Oh, my God, I forgot about that. Yeah, but no, it was a lot of fun, though. I mean, I saw a good time. The production values, you go and you go to an event. And I don't know what more you want.
For all the bizarreness of the end, and as much as, we've kind of shit on some of the decisions the last half of the card, it still was a really a good time to go. Like, it wasn't so bad that I thought, we're here to pick nits, and we've done a stellar job, I think. Mm-hmm. So, but overall, it was an entertaining night.
It was, yeah. Somehow they managed to spread 8 matches out across 4 hours, but the 4 hours felt like they went by pretty fast.
Oh, yeah.
We can bitch about aspects of the matches. I still had a good time. Mm-hmm. If I really wanted to put it into historical perspective, I mean, you've got your shitty WrestleManias like 2 and 11, and some people say 9, and then you've got your ones that were like those god-awful undercard marathon. It looked like somebody just taped together a whole bunch of superstars tapings, like, oh, here's Haku versus Hercules. So you got those that were shitty. I feel like this one was just a notch above those. It's not going to go down as the most memorable, like Rock said. It's not going to be a classic, like everyone sucking the dicks of that one match. I had a great time. As far as a WrestleMania goes, I thought it was pretty mediocre, but as far as an event goes and an experience, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, because, I think we had already mentioned that the crowd around us was probably the best of the 3 WrestleManias we went to.
Yeah.
So anytime you're around a good crowd, even if they're not with you, it's fun to be around a good crowd.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we'll have more later, I guess, since we're going to Raw tonight as well. Or not, depending on, never mind, nothing's open. We'll probably do a show because we're so pissed off.
Well, no, it's in Atlanta, so Raw is going to close at 5 o'clock, too. Whatever you see on TV is going to be smoke and mirrors, because the fucking event's not going to happen because it's in this shit town.
And make sure to tune in at 5 o'clock. So it'll be the taping from 3 to 5, and not a minute past. So, all right, guys, thanks for listening. We'll get back with you for a Raw review, whatever, and we're out.